We're now recording.
The time is 6:33, the meeting of the Human Services Committee, Tuesday, May 28th, 2013. Come to order, Ms. Davis, will you please call the roll?
David Holman?
Present.
Aaron Decker?
Here.
Boy Frederick?
He's excused, he called.
Okay. Angie Montemuro?
Here.
Gabe Mudo?
Here.
Anita Johnson?
Here.
David Arrington? And we have Lindsay Allen?
Here.
And Alicia Skoliski?
Here.
Any citizen comments? Citizens have 5 minutes to address the committee, please come forward and state your name and address for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Jack Rose, 4315, 68th Street, good afternoon. I'm here to put some good word out as far as our crisis intervention team training. I received this email today from Sergeant John Rhodey and also from Chief Morrissey. And it's a report that went in Sergeant Rhodey from Officer Tyler Cochran, who is a graduate of our last class. Over the weekend, Police Officer Brennan, a badge 608, and I were sent to a med call. Dispatch advised that the call said that an 18-year-old man had been down in the basement of the TV for the past 3 days. I arrived on scene with rescue, was able to calm the subject down and recognize some of the signs of his mental illness. I could see how this situation could have turned into a dangerous situation for officers if he had not received CIT training. Once the subject had arrived at the hospital, I was the only one he would talk to and had to calm him down several times when staff at the hospital entered the room and agitated him. To say that CIT training that I received was helpful would be an understatement. Several people, including a crisis worker, complimented me on my ability to work with the subject. The subject wanted to go voluntarily to St. Luke's, and it was arranged for him to do so. I just wanted to pass this along to you and wondered if you could forward it to the individuals who have been putting on the CIT training and tell them to keep up the good work. Also, I believe the Supervisor Arrington had requested the percentages. Right now, Kenosha Police Department is 500 out of 199 total. That's 25%.
Jack, you said 500.
I'm sorry.
15.
Thank you.
That's weird, man.
I know that.
Okay, 50 out of 199, that's 25%. Of that, the patrol officers, Kenosha Police Department, 39 out of 134. That is 29%. And the additional ones that go between patrol officers and the total count, we have 4 service officers in the high schools, 1 detective, 2 crime prevention officers, 3 supervisors, and 1 chaplain. In our sheriff's department, we have 19 out of 90. And that is patrol deputies, that's 21%. Kenosha jail staff, we have 29 out of 152 jailers, that's 19%. So those are the percentages for the Kenosha Police Department, Kenosha Sheriff's Department. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Could you email that and the letter as well to the committee if that's possible?
I sure will.
Any other citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of 4-23-13?
So moved.
Motion by Supervisor Mudo, second by Supervisor Montemuro. Do you think that? You're new. They can't do that if they're new, can they? They can? Do you think that?
Aye.
You can say aye, or yes, or no, or nay, or abstain. Your choice.
Aye.
Very, be emphatic about it.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, the minutes are approved. Agenda item number 4, resolutions to approve the following county executive appointments. Dr. Gregory Woodward to the Workforce Development Board, Dr. Diane Gerlach to the Board of Health, Robert Pitts and Supervisor John O'Day to the Brookside Board of Trustees. Mr. Jansen, good evening.
Good evening. If, with your permission, I'd just like to start backwards and work our way up that list. We do expect Dr. Woodward, he did indicate he'd be here this evening, he has not arrived yet. So I will take the two reappointments first, and that would be Robert Pitts and Supervisor John O'Day to the Board of Trustees in Brookside. Both have served, certainly Mr. Pitts has been on there a number of years, and as you can see in the write-up, he has attended 40 out of the last 40 meetings since his last appointment. There is one slight typo on that write-up that was done through the executive's office, and that is that they do receive a stipend for attending the meetings, only on the Board of Supervisors, though. So that's why you'll see it's a threat on Supervisor O'Day's. So I would ask that that Mr. Pitts be reappointed to serve on the Board of Trustees, and if we take them both together, that Supervisor O'Day, who has attended 33 out of the last 35 meetings, also be reappointed to serve on the Board of Trustees.
Can we take them separately? Is there any objections back to the committee? Okay. Which would you like? Whichever one. Motion to approve John O'Day to the Brookside Trustees. Motion by Supervisor Decker, second by Supervisor Johnson. Chair votes aye.
To approve Robert Pitts for the Brookside Board of Trustees.
Second.
Okay, motion by Supervisor Nuno, second by Supervisor Decker. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Aye.
Committee? All those voting aye?
Aye.
I'm abstaining. Okay.
Committee votes aye. Let the record show Supervisor Montemaro is abstaining. Jansen?
Dr. Gerlach will be presented by Cindy Johnson. Dr. Gerlach is also here.
Good evening. Cindy Johnson. It's my pleasure. I'd like to present Dr. Gerlach here and for your approval and for her to be assigned to our Board of Health. I've known Dr. Gerlach professionally for quite some time, but also through her volunteer efforts in our community. More than 14 years ago, I ran into her at Thanksgiving Day serving food at churches. And since then, we've run into each other multiple times at workshops presented throughout the community and also through the Smush Community Health Center, where she works and performs her pediatric services. Also, Dr. Gerlach just recently signed on as our immunization director for the Kenosha County Division of Health, which we're very grateful. And that's to remove no stipend as certainly volunteer. And now I present it for our board.
Any questions?
I read through your resume and it's
Supervisor Johnson. No.
Oh, sorry. And it's obvious you have a lifetime of commendable service to the community and to other places where you've been. I guess the only question would you be able to attend all the meetings? Are you free? Do you have that availability?
I do block it out of my calendar. I cannot be at this next one because I have a board review course because I have to be certified this year.
Well, I think that you'll be an excellent addition to the board. We're lucky to have you.
Move to approve. Have to go.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Montemaro, second by Supervisor Johnson. You can go.
Aye.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd be happy to present Dr. Woodward. I know he has not arrived yet this evening. Can we have a preference?
Can we just move it to for the next? So, yeah, the.
We're talking about, this is the president of Carthage, right?
Correct. Yeah. And we moved into this meeting because he didn't make the last one. And we do have a workforce development board meeting coming up in June, which would be important for him to attend. We do have, of course, Brian Albrecht from Gateway and Chancellor Ford from Parkside on that. And he'd be an excellent addition to that. So I'm hoping that we can still move ahead today if at all possible.
Supervisor Johnson?
I was going to say that, you know, I think if anybody's read about him, he's, I think we'd be lucky to have him on board. Again, I think he's one where look him up when he's done, speaks to it. I also see he's involved with the revitalization project downtown. He's, I don't think we need him here. At least I don't.
Further discussion? Supervisor.
Well, I probably agree with Supervisor Johnson. However, I'm going to stick to my guns in the way we did it before. Then we expect everybody to be at the meeting, and therefore I'll move to table until he can be here. I mean, I don't have any problems if everybody's okay to wait until later on in the meeting, or just in case he shows up.
Supervisor, would you like to hold your motion until we've heard from some of the rest of the committee? I think other members would like to state their case.
Sure.
Supervisor Martin.
Do you know if the timing of the meetings would be okay to show up?
The Workforce Development Board meets, yes, he has committed to those. They meet at 7:30 in the morning, so he'd be able to schedule those first thing in the morning.
So
this one, he continues to run into conflicts with.
But not that.
Correct.
Well, let's see. I would like to see if he shows up. And we've decided either. From the end of the agenda,
how's that? Supervisor, is there anything? Did you want to restate your motion, Supervisor?
I'll make a motion to table it. Or if we want to do it just to the end of the meeting, or if he shows up, or until we can table until he shows up.
That's your motion?
That is my motion.
Okay, there's a motion to table until he shows up, made by Supervisor Middle, second by Supervisor Decker.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Table until the end of the meeting. Agenda item 5, 2012 Department of Human Services Year End Report.
Hello. It's been a while. And this is really just a formality for me tonight, because obviously 2012 is closed, but because of the timing of the meetings, we hadn't been able to get back to you on this. So, but we did a budget resolution. I'm to report quarterly to this committee. And so this is our year-end report. And there's really nothing changed since what was presented at the county board to close out. If you want to just look under the very first summary page, which is in tab 5, and but anyways, it's just the summary update, and then obviously we have the corresponding documentation that goes along with it. But for aging, for DADS, Aging and Disability Services, the first line, just a little bit over $211,000 over budget. A lot had to do with the mental health and IOTA costs that had been rising, and that had been reported quarterly. Brookside Care Center, that the note says that, yes, they did come in with a profit, and that will stay in their reserves. That had stayed at the end of 2012 in their reserves, their net profit. So that's why it's not included in here, because this is a report that goes, the bottom line goes back to the general fund. Okay, but Brookside's, that's why it's a C note in the fourth quarter, is that there's $10 there. Children and Family Services had a small savings of $59,000, but a savings of $59,220. Health had some savings from levy-funded positions of $200,000. The medical examiner, we had, obviously we had been reporting it quarterly with the increased number of autopsies, so they were overrun about $73,000. So altogether, with just within this department, our department, we had just about 25,000 requests for additional levy. However, if you look on the bottom where it says increased human services indirect cost drawdown, because we're allocated some of our overhead and administration from all the other areas of the county, like finance and payroll and the county exec and the corporation council, we have a portion that gets charged to our department, and we can draw down federal and state money to help offset those costs. So this year it was $292,000 over what we had thought we were going to draw down. So it was quite nice. And the health department city settlement of $170,000, we also covered that, and that was approved by the county board earlier in the year for that.
So actually, with those two, again, the Human Services came back with an addition back into the general fund of about just under $100,000. The first quarter report.
If you don't mind, we can take questions as we go, if that's okay.
Sure.
Any questions this morning? Supervisor Mumford?
I just have a question, because at the last county board we heard that there's access to buy building. Did that come starting in 2013, that money, or is that
yes, for the Brookside?
Yes.
Yes.
Is that in here?
The plan, well, in the note under Brookside Care Center, there is, at the time of close-up, there's $273,000 that was going to be sitting in their reserve fund.
So some of that is probably
yes,
what you're talking about
done.
Now. Okay.
So yes, that house that I really wasn't going to go through all the pages unless you had specific. I mean, this is just
Supervisor Tackett, no, it's okay, go ahead.
I know that, I didn't look this up. Did we budget differently this year for 2013 for our medical examiner?
Yes, we did. Outcomes? And we're going to be increasing that for 2014.
Okay, are we already like past our base that we budgeted?
Yeah, we're about, and you'll see the first quarter. I didn't get the first quarter information down for the packet. So it'll come next month to report, but I think we're about 25 to 30,000 estimated this year because we got more autopsies than what we got. Keep in mind, 2013 was done in July and August and September of last year.
Right.
So we had the last quarter where there was an increase in autopsies that were not included in 2013. But our 2014 budget is definitely going to show an increase.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But as I said, the first quarter I didn't have it done in the packet, and I know we don't necessarily want to hand it out anymore. So what's going to happen is for the finance committee meets June 13th, and you guys meet the end of the month. So we're going to go to finance with it, but you'll get it in the email, the same packet that finance will get at the same time. But then I'll come the end of June with for your meeting.
I got it. Say that one more
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I know. Finance meets before you will in June.
Yeah, I'm good on that.
Okay, so when we give the packet to finance, mm-hmm. we'll also email it to you.
Okay, because we don't see
the first quarter report. Okay, we'll
January
through March. Okay. Yeah, January through March of 2013. Yeah, and then in August, I'm hoping to come back in June. We're playing catch up with year end and then the auditors are in May. So. But then I'll be here to present it. Or answering questions in June.
Are there any other questions? Or do you have more?
No.
There's no questions? I have one. What you put together is so lovely. Is it possible, you're going to hate me for this question, is it possible that you can also, when you do these things, send the raw data file. That way I don't have to take the graphics that you've made, copy them, put them into a Microsoft Word document, convert it into a web page, save it as a picture file, delete everything else, and then upload that to Facebook. That would be really great.
Well, it comes in an Excel file, so we'll just send you that.
That'd be fabulous.
Yeah.
That would be great.
For everybody?
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's hard to print from Excel. So I don't know.
I prefer Excel too.
There's a number of, particularly the state of Wisconsin does this, where, and I know Department of Workforce Development is really good on this, where they'll give you it as an Excel file, as a Word file, and then sometimes if there is something that's a graphic that they've made from that, that exists too, they'll also give it to you in a PDF format, so you can sort of choose how you want to sort of play with the data to do very different, to do different
so
things.
So we'll send PDF and Excel files, okay? For those of you who don't have that's how the PDF is created.
Because I've discovered people really like knowing some of the mechanics, and so seeing some of these things, is people like it. For whatever reason, they like it, and I like doing it. So.
Great.
Thank
not
you.
A problem. I don't hate you.
Because she has an Excel file.
Agenda item 6, Department of Children and Family Services, approval of a resolution to modify the 2013 budget for a Healthy Families Kenosha grant.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Good to see everybody. I brought with me Nancy Morey, who coordinates our Prevention Services Network.
And what I'd like to talk to you about today is we had a wonderful opportunity. We applied for a grant to start a new program called Healthy Families Kenosha. And this was a grant that was fairly competitive. There were a total of 23 awarded, but only four were awarded at the large dollar amount, which is approximately $400,000 spread out over 3 years. So what this grant will do, it's a three-year grant to the Division of Children and Family Services, and it's the funding provided by the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine Public Health from the Wisconsin Partnership Program. And the funding is going to be used to expand family resource center parenting, case management, home visitation, to support African-American mothers and families. And it really aligns with the Life Course Initiative for Healthy Families Community Action Plan. So the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine Public Health and the Wisconsin Partnership Program have set forth a Life Course Initiative to improve the health outcomes specifically for African American families. And that is the target population that they let this grant out for. And the reason they did that is that statistically, and just looking at Kenosha as an example, about 7% of the population in Kenosha is African American. But the number of births in Kenosha, 11% of the births are African American. But 16% of African-American infants were born premature, and 12% had low birth weight. And if you look at infant mortality in Kenosha County, the rate of infant mortality per 1,000 births is 15.1 in Kenosha, which is, for the African-American population, which is about three times the rate for white infants. And so this initiative done by the Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health under this name, Wisconsin Partnership Program, they released a grant opportunity specifically focusing on supporting African-American families to work on these disparities, i.e. bring these ratios back in line with the general white population. And even though they were looking at data, this talks a lot about infant mortality and low birth weight, their grant was much larger than that. It focused on supporting families in general, and we applied, and Nancy Morey took the lead in really applying for this through the Prevention Services Network. So the goal of this program is to develop appropriate parental expectations, improve parent-child interactions, support healthy child development, reduce child maltreatment, improve family functioning, enhance social and emotional support, and increased access to concrete supports of African-American families. And this model that we wrote to in the grant, we went for evidence-based models, which means these are models of interacting with families that have been shown to be proven effective. So there's an overarching model called Healthy Families American Model, which is a home visitation program, which means these services are supplied in the family's home. Not people don't come to an office, but we're going to them. And specifically, what's going to be expanded with this grant is an in-home parenting program run by Kenosha Area and Family Aging Services Incorporated, which will increase one FTE to run an in-home parenting program for this population. And they're going to be using two evidence-based models of parenting curriculum. And those models are a nurturing parent program and effective black parenting. And both of those models have been shown to be very effective in improving the outcomes of supporting families and improving outcomes for children and families. And then once families are enrolled in that and involved in that program, once they finish that parenting component, they then will be given some additional case management support through the Prevention Services Network. And so we will be increasing one position, and that's under in-home case management through Prevention Services Network. And that will continue to offer support to the family. And they use a very strong strength-based wraparound model, meaning they meet with parents in their home, and they will look at any other needs the family has and develop a treatment plan for that family where they'll help direct them to different services in the community or services within our prevention services network. And we will have an academic partner with this grant, and that's Dr. David Riley. He's with the School of Human Ecology at the University of Wisconsin. And it's a three-year grant for $379,900 that will be given to Kenosha County. When the grant funding ends, the positions will be eliminated, and this budget modification poses no levy funded costs to the county whatsoever. What's also unusual is often grants like this are presented as a one-year grant that you can renew, you know, two more times. They really presented this as a three-year grant, and they're very excited about our proposal, and you know, we had a meeting with all the university stakeholders last week, and they said you should view this as a three-year grant, and they look forward to see the outcome. So I respectfully ask for the Human Services Committee's approval. We'd be glad to answer any questions.
So in the in-home program will be one full-time employee, so they can, or is there two? And
two
then one
programs.
In the preventive. So yes. Actually there'll be three people.
Oh, I apologize. So listen to your question. One and one.
One and one. So they'll be, which makes sense for at least 3 years.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yes.
And they'll have feedback material for us and for the grant.
Yes. There's
we'll go back to UW-Madison.
There's a real strong evaluation component.
Right.
So we have our program evaluation that's connected to the Department of Human Services. And Dr. Riley plays a role in this as well, meaning he'll be another outside person to ask critical questions, give us ideas and feedback, and be part of the evaluation process.
I have a question. I just want to understand. So is Healthy Families Kenosha, is that whole program based around this grant, or was that already in existence and you're adding to this program that's currently in existence?
Good question. We have parts of this grant, in a sense. We had pieces of it. We brought them together and expanded them. So this grant we entitled Healthy Families Kenosha to work with African-American families through and we're the case management person is not hired yet, but Nancy Morey's Prevention Services Network does have case managers that work voluntarily with families. So this would be an expansion. We add position. And then the family support program through Kenosha Area and Family Aging Services has in-home parenting program that's very effective.
Okay.
But they've added an extra curriculum, immunity effective black parenting. They've added that to the program, and they'll be hiring one person to expand that. So we've taken sort of two existing programs and combined them in to work with this population.
Yes.
Yes.
You can governance, Alicia.
I just wanted to ask, how successful has your previous programs that you're combining been with what you're trying to achieve by getting this grant?
Oh, very good. The family support program, which does the in-home parenting piece, we reported to that at different times. They do an in-home parenting program, and some of the things we track is, are we preventing child abuse and neglect? Are people on grading scales viewing themselves as being better parents? And in that program, one of the statistics I'm always proud to talk about is we average about 80-90% in the families that complete the family support program are not referred for child abuse and neglect while in the program, and are not referred for child abuse and neglect 1 year after, within the 12 months after. Which that doesn't mean, that means no one's even called in. So that's a very good statistic.
Who's going to be eligible for this, or how are you going to come up with the eligibility system?
I'll let Nancy speak a little bit. How would people enroll?
Yeah, we will be accepting referrals through the Division of Health. When people have a new baby, they're often enrolled in a program called prenatal care coordination through the Division of Health. when that baby turns 60 days old, that program ends. Prenatal care coordination is really a Medicaid benefit, so it's only eligible until the baby is 2 months old. So that program will then make referrals into Health Families America so that we can continue to work with those families. We would also be accepting referrals from the WIC program, and those are families that are, you know, have little children that are getting WIC coupons for nutrition purposes. So we will accept referrals from that program also.
And so I'd like to give you a number. In 2011, WIC referred 177 African-American women for prenatal care coordination. So that's the subgroup if you think about it. And so then what we would be doing is before they leave that program, we'll be introducing ourselves to them. And it's a voluntary program, but that's the idea, is meet them while they're still in that program to continue to offer support in these parenting programs.
Is that going to be just for first-time parenting or people that already have children, or how does that work?
This particular program will be for anybody who has children. In Hampshire County, we have another wonderful program called Nurse Family Partnership that's run by our Division of Health, and they provide services to first-time parents only, and that program follows them prenatally through, I think it's age 3 of the child. So in order to not duplicate, we will be taking families that have, you know, this would be the second, third, fourth pregnancy.
We could take a first-time mother if for some reason a parent chose not to participate in that other program, but would prefer to be in our, we're not trying to, you know, take business away or anything. But so there's nothing prohibiting that.
Yeah, but since you already had some children that went through this, why do we have to keep on doing, like, say, for the second, third, fourth, or whatever child? I mean, I can understand to do it the first time, because mother, parents, I'm not going to say mother, just parents are not really used to it. They need some directions, support, whatever. But after the first time, should they be able to themselves?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, that's a very good question. You know, what I can tell you from my position, you know, the Division of Children and Family Services often works with families after bad things have happened. And, for example, child abuse and neglect is the bad thing that happens. Parents abuse their children. It is very rare that a parent abuses an only child. It, more often than not, it's when there's families with 2 or 3 or 4 children involved. And why is that? Because economically things change. It's tougher to parent 3 to 4 kids. And so that parent that may be sort of marginally getting by and doing an acceptable but not a great job of parenting with one child, suddenly they add a second child or a third child. Economic circumstances change. Maybe another problem in the family occurs. So what I can tell you from real life experience is we're not getting referrals. We are getting some referrals on newborns, first child to single mom. I'm not saying that never happens. But if you look at the majority of the referrals for child abuse and neglect, they are with multiple children in the family. And if you read our annual report that we came out with, you'll note that in that report that I said there was of all the children that were placed in foster care, about 133, 97 or 98 of them were sibling sets, meaning those families came to our attention when there are multiple kids in the home. So in those cases, we have to respond because someone was hurt. And even if one child's hurt, we have to respond. And we tend to respond to protect all the children. What's nice about this program is it's going to focus on that same families that maybe are at risk for having problems or struggling, and we're not going to close the door on them because they have more than one child. We're going to try to prevent anything bad from happening and improve the outcomes of all the kids in the home, which is really the goal of the program. So when you're coming to do parenting, don't think it's just going to be parenting on how you care for a newborn. It could be parenting. How do you manage your household when you have 4 mouths to feed plus yourself and you don't have another spouse, or you do have a spouse, but you're both working so much that everyone's coming and going. So it's not just parenting like how do you care for an infant. It's how do you parent all the children in your home and raise healthy kids.
If I could just add on to that for a second, it's not going to be if you had your second kid, you get referred to this program, then you have your third kid, you get referred to the program. You're going to come into that program, as you point out, hopefully learn some good parenting skills and different ways to handle stress and cope with whatever's going on in your life so you're parenting better. And if you need a tune-up, maybe after the fourth kid, you're pulling your hair out, you can call Nancy's group, and they'll fit you in somewhere and provide you with assistance. So it's not a revolving door. Every time you have a child, you're back in this program. Yeah. So it'll be give them that first time, teaching the skills, follow them, offer them the support that they need after that, but you generally aren't coming back in to get the same service over and over again.
I was going to follow up with another question, which I think you answered. That question. So what happens if that happens again? In other words, they have two children, whatever it is, so they're going to do this program. Now they have another child, and they're doing...
If something bad's
something
happening,
happens,
I mean, they're going to probably have a connection with somebody in this program. They're going to pick up the phone and say, hey, I need help. Right. And that person's going to... Nancy's group offers a lot of prevention services. They're going to find them the right place to go. Okay. So, yeah, you just aren't counting the same person over and over and over again.
And then when a family leaves our formal services, we've got the Family Resource Center. So if a family just needs some information or wants to come in and pick up some information about community resources, they can just come to the Resource Center and get whatever they need. So we have lots of families that we work with that continue to call, not necessarily because they want to open another formal case, but just because they have a relationship with one of my staff. And then they say, ooh, I'm having a problem with this, can you help me? And then, it's usually a real light touch, and then they move on. And so it happens all the time within our array of services.
Supervisor Johnson.
I just wanted to mention something, too. It sounds like, as I've been hearing you discuss it, that even though this is geared towards a certain set of people, that it's actually going to be freeing up other resources so that the general community will actually benefit as well. So at first I was wondering, especially because we just had the infant mortality rate for African-American children, the notice come out that they've actually dropped so much, and I was thinking, wow, why are we excluding the other sets? But in listening to you speak, I understand, if I understand correctly, there are a lot of very similar programs that instead of being, instead of this set going into those, will free up room in the other sets.
Right.
So it's actually going to benefit everybody.
It's going to increase capacity, period. And it's going to divert some of the families into this program, which will open the doors for more families through Standard Prevention Services Network. Mm-hmm. And the Family Support Program is open to the community at large. That's under our umbrella of prevention services. So it's all under that prevention. So that's not just ordinary families, but that's open to families that we get referrals from schools or pediatricians or.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Do you think everyone's going to religious schools?
Yeah. I just want to know if you guys had any printed statistics about your success rate with African American women in your other programs. Printed out, or if you even have any
I don't have anything with me today for that. We set goals for all the programs. We carry, we collect demographic information. I'm not sure if we actually break it out per race.
It doesn't even have to be, but I was just asking because this program is focused towards African American women, so I didn't know if you had it as a separate statistic on how successful you guys have previously been with them, and so why you truly, this program is going to work for them, or going to help them completely, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, all I can say is the program model, the in-home parenting model, when they say it's evidence-based, what they're saying is that model of working with families in their home is proven to be very effective, and there's some national statistics about the effectiveness. That's why it's called evidence. As far as the nurturing parent program through CASI, the statistic I gave you was across all, you know, backgrounds. It wasn't just carving out like 90% for white families and successful and only 50% for African American.
Okay.
We work with both people, you know, many different families. We work with a lot of Hispanic families.
And you had also said that WIC is the people who refer them, or the main people that you guys get referral from? Okay. So I was just wondering, what would you do about families who may have abuse going on in the home, but they're unaware of it? How are you guys able to handle that?
The family's unaware?
Like, or no, you guys, your program is unaware of that family.
Well, anyone who works within the Prevention Services Network is an indicated reporter. So any concerns that we would have about safety of children in the home would be reported to DCFS.
Yeah.
Yep. And I just wanted, but you guys are allowed to then offer yourself to the program without having to be referred by those two other.
Well, this is a prevention program. So how we think the model is going to work, our plan, the way we've written the proposal is, we're going to get referrals for women, infants, and children, which is the WIC program. We can take referrals from other sources. If during, let's say a family enrolls in this program, and during their work with the family, any professional sees a child abuse and neglect, or any allegation of abuse and neglect, they call that into Child Protective Services, which is Kenosha County's Child Protective Services Unit, our access office. And we make a decision to screen in or screen out. And if we say, yes, this is an allegation of abuse that needs to be investigated, we screen it in. And we, our county staff, are going to do what they do with every family when they get a call like that. So they will investigate to see if any child's been on it. That's our standard way of working.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just have one.
Did you have any
ideas? No.
Oh,
no. Good. Thank you.
Super. That's a lot
of gravel. I have one quick question. You said that the Afro-American mortality rate was 3 times, and now, thank God, that rate has gone down. So my question is, this 3 time, is it a little less already before you start this, or is that older data? Is that what you applied for the
grant? Yeah, that was the data that was in our.
And
in
now
our
we're already improving it,
yes.
So this should be really even
yes.
more of an improvement.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. That's the number from our
report.
Yeah,
that's right.
You have listed in the RFP like your goals of how many families you want in there to accept and things like that. But what are your goals for the outcome? Percentage,
you know, after a year, what do you have those goals set, or did I miss those in the RFP, or bearing the proposal, the original proposal? Yeah, there's overarching goals, and then there's shorter goals.
Yeah. There was a logic model included in the proposal, which short-term goals would be parents would have an increased use of prenatal care. Parents will learn appropriate developmental expectations. See that? Yes. I meant like not goals of what you're going to teach them, but goals of outcomes, as in how many people are going to walk away, what percentage of people are going to walk away knowing this stuff. They're not going to just come in and then leave and not actually use this in their everyday life.
Yeah.
I don't know that we actually put percentages to that. I think part of this is based on, as we're working with the partnership program, these are all academics, and they are, you know, hoping that it will help contribute to the research on home visitation programs. So we're looking for some guidance from Dr. Riley and from the university on where we should be. But you will, obviously, I'm guessing, you're going to be tracking these things,
yes.
So that way you do really know your outcomes.
Right.
Yes.
Part of our evaluation will be outcome-based. Part of it will also be a process evaluation.
Okay.
Thank
you.
I was just curious, but I was thinking, so how will you quantify the outcomes? I mean, do you have any idea now what they're going to be looking for? That seems like it would be kind of a difficult thing to show.
Uneventful. Looking at, you know, things like have children been referred, have families been referred to DCFS because of abuse or neglect concerns?
You mean after they've come through?
After they've been through.
Okay.
Yes.
We'll be looking at how children, you know, infants been immunized as they're supposed to be. We'll be looking at, you know, how are there safe sleep situations in homes? Have any babies died? I mean, that'll be the ultimate. You know, we will be hoping to prevent infant deaths.
Sure.
So.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what I was wondering.
And you have lots of different instruments that you use with these model programs that look at, you know, has the parent learned, you know, whatever X, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and then we do like pre-post surveys with parents. So when they come into the program, they answer the questions, and then at a six-month point, they will, again, take that survey. We'll be using several different ones. One of them is called the Protective Factors Survey, which looks at the things that every family needs to have safe, healthy children, basically. So we'll be looking at whether families are improving and learning the things they need to, you know, to have those protective factors exist within their homes. There'll be lots and lots of research on this.
Supervisor Beck?
As long as you discussed safe sleeping habits for kids or children, babies, are you focusing, or is one of your focuses on co-sleeping, since we do have issues with co-sleeping deaths in Milwaukee, sadly, to some degree?
Yeah, you will. I mean, that would be something we would talk with parents about.
Supervisor Montero?
One quick question. Any of it pre-birth, too? Any of the education pre or only after the baby's born? This is all after the baby's are here, correct?
Yeah, the way we wrote the grant is we wrote it that we would sort of pick up after the child's born.
Right. But you already have the other programs, and that's part of the reason that the mortality rate has gone down, thank God, is because of pre. So it will be a continuation. Okay.
I have a couple.
Okay.
You all have referenced a number of things that I don't believe we'll mention not only in this resolution, but I don't recall seeing them in the packet. And so for me, in terms of researching some of these things, or pulling some of these models from how to do things, that would have been extraordinarily helpful. So maybe that's just kind of an FYI moving forward. Maybe it's there and I missed it, but I don't recall seeing it.
Where are which things they were?
The program that you just mentioned, like the I'll find it in the minutes and send it to you. The second thing is, I heard a response to a question that we don't track according to race for some of these things. That was the question to the department was, what's your success rate with African American families? We got a breakdown by race in terms of what that looks like.
We track the demographics of all the families we work with and all the clients. So we track race, you know, ethnicity, income level. Generally, as the overall goals, so on most of the programs that I report on, are goals for all of the families we work with. So if I work with 100 families and 91 are successful in that program, I'm saying 91%, that's a 91%. Within there, under that 100, I can tell you a breakdown of how many men, women are in there, how old they are, economically, you know, where they are falling in the economic spectrum. Race background.
Yeah. So then that is something that, or something like this, in terms of a past record with certain demographics of people, we could get a snapshot of. If it's not, that's something the department needs to change. The division needs to change.
I would need to research that further.
Yeah, because that would be exceptionally helpful. Because I have my own reservations about some of this. I'll be honest.
I don't want to give you the
incorrect
information. I need to
double check
about that.
Perfect. Yeah. And if it's not, then that's a practice that needs to change. I don't think I have any further. Oh, just one. Do we have any idea what the timetable will be for seeing expected outcomes of this? How early? Best guess.
Well, if this committee approves this resolution, and it's approved by finance admin and approved by the county board, we're hoping to begin July 1st.
Okay.
And then we would need to at least get half a year in to see, to get some cohort to go through the beginning of the program and to start doing case management. But if you really want to see the outcomes, you need to have families complete the program. Yeah.
Is there any component at all in any of this to address socioeconomic factors, or do we already consider that taken care of by other entities?
That'll be part of the case management component. We will be working with families to make sure they're connected to benefits that are available through the county. You know, work with them to connect them to job center services if they're unemployed or that type of thing.
That's the best we can do.
What's your, we can't create jobs, but.
I'm aware of that.
That's what this was a grant written, you know, to the Blood Christmanship.
I understand the constraints of our grants.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Does anyone else in the committee have anything?
Second.
Motion to approve by Supervisor Neal, second by Supervisor Martin. No, we think that makes sense. We have to do youth and governance interviews at the end of the introductions at the end. Committee members?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. It's adopted. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Agenda item number, I have to scroll back up. Seven.
That'll be able.
You said the end. Agenda item 7, discussion of the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Good evening, Ms. Gray.
And I just want to share some information with you on the Affordable Care Act, which, as the name means, the formal name is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which is called another acronym. It's also known as Universal Health Care, the Health Care Exchange, Obamacare. The most recent name that's been given to this is the Marketplace.
I apologize, but for moving forward, which name will we be using to refer to this?
The Affordable Care Act. And I may use the Marketplace also. But it's officially the Affordable Care Act.
Just so we're all on the same page.
Okay.
Thank you.
But I just want to make sure everybody understood what I'm about to share, because it comes in the meetings. And the Affordable Care Act goes into effect officially on January 1st, 2014. After much debate and discussion, it will take effect on January 1st, and I think you've either heard or seen on the news that the Affordable Care Act requires that everyone get health insurance coverage through their employer or through state plans. And employers who had at least 51 employees who work at least 30 hours per week, I'm sorry, yeah, 30 hours per week, have to offer affordable health care to their employees. And so this is going to be a major undertaking, as I'm sure you know. Governor Walker has recognized that this is going to be a major undertaking, and he has allocated additional funding in the 2013-15 biennial budget because of the workload impact that this is going to have on everybody, but particularly the income maintenance staff. Over the biennium, he has identified $57 million additional dollars for the entire state income maintenance programs. A large chunk of that will go to Milwaukee, but $38 million of that will go to the balance of state agencies, which we are one of the balance of state agencies. And it's, the money is divided up over the last 6 months of the year, July through December of this year, he's identified $9.8 million that will go to the balance of state agencies. For 2014, $22.4 million will go to the balance of state agencies. And in the first half of 2015, $5.9 million will go to the balance of state agencies to operate the Affordable Care Act, as well as the changes that are taking place in Badger Care Plus. WKRP, which is Racine and Kenosha, that partnership, that Ivy partnership that started in 2012, our share of that money is about $3.5 million over the abiding one. And once again, it's divided up the last 6 months of this year, $817,000 has been identified for our consortium. $2 million for 2014, just over $2 million, and about $550 million for January through June 2015. And the reason money is being identified this year is because the open enrollment period for affordable care starts October 1, so that people can come in, see if they're eligible, and be ready to be put into the marketplace for the affordable care into the marketplace. Put into a slot by
January 1, 2014.
Yeah,
that's
million.
Oh,
I'm so
sorry.
I changed it.
We're going to pay the entire
whole hiring. I said, I'm insured.
Yes, Lori is
correct. $550,000 January through June 2015. Sorry about that. There has been lots of discussion, lots of meetings, lots of preliminary planning for how we're going to manage this tremendous workload that we anticipate is going to happen as a result of this. The state has had some preliminary training with management people that started in May. The conversation started about March or so. There's a lot of systems changes, computer system changes that are going to have to take place because under the Affordable Care Act marketplace, all systems within the United States are supposed to align with each other so that we can get our data and information from the federal exchange. And so the state of Wisconsin is right now remapping their computer system to try to align itself with the federal system. And that's quite an undertaking, and everybody has their fingers crossed that they're going to be ready to go by January 1. Where they're training, the state is training staff. They have a training plan that starts in August in preparation for October. And so all of us have signed up across the state to be trained once the system changes are taking place. The state is also sending out informational notices to people who may be eligible. It's estimated at this point in time that in the state of Wisconsin, there are approximately 550,000 uninsured people who could potentially come into the marketplace or come into our offices statewide to see if they're eligible for either Badger Care Plus or the marketplace. Of that 550,000 WKRP, Racine and Kenosha, our estimated group of people is about 28,250. And that's on top of the 42,000 cases we currently manage. And so we're going to add to that. And the expectation is once these notices go out in June, July, August, September, whenever the state is ready to generate these notices, that they'll be coming to our offices or calling us to get information. In addition,
I apologize for it. Could you repeat those numbers again? We're expecting how much on top of what we already have?
28,245 is what the state has estimated. They've given each consortium their own page of estimations, and this is our page of estimations right here. And they've kind of factored it in terms of how they think the flow is going to occur. For example, the first, between October and December, they expect 10,174 people to either come to our doors or to call seeking information about the Affordable Care Marketplace or Badger Care Plus. Because the rules, I should tell you also that the rules have changed for Badger Care Plus in addition to all of this. At this point in time, people are eligible for Badger Care Plus if they meet 133% of the federal poverty level. It's, of course, based on household size and that sort of thing. And so as an example, a household of one that would equate to about $11,100. Here's my chart right here. I have many charts. $11,490 is the 100% poverty level. Right now, people who are at 133% federal poverty level, which would be about 12,000, I'm sorry, $1,292 a month, and we have to factor that out. They're eligible for our Badger Care Plus programs, but come January 1, that is being reduced to 100% so that people who are not eligible for our Badger Care programs will be transitioned to the marketplace. Could you email
both those documents to us?
Certainly. I can email you whatever you like, because I've got my phone notes here. You can get that too.
Yeah, that might be a good idea.
Okay. I'll do that. But once the word gets out about this, people are going to flock to our doors. That's the expectation. So we have to be ready for that. We have to be ready for this influx of people that are going to come. And what we're doing right now is having discussions across the state, as well as with our partner, the City County, to talk about how we're going to plan for managing this workload. And one of the ways, of course, that we're going to do this is to hire additional people with the money that the governor has identified, and that's the purpose of the money. We may have to do some of this through overtime. We are just, at this point in time, trying to figure out how we're going to manage this influx of people. And on top of that, the state has asked us for our preliminary transition plan of how we're going to manage this workload. And it's due by June 15th. June 15th, in about 3 weeks. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns, even at the state level. They can't answer all the questions related to this because this is new for all of us. But preliminarily, we have to submit a plan that includes how many staff we plan to hire, what kind of space and computer needs we have, what our overtime estimates, what kind of outreach strategies we're going to have, how we're going to train staff, when we're going to do it, and that sort of thing. So it's a really major undertaking. So we'll be putting our heads together, Racine County and Kenosha County, and putting our transition plan together. As part of the Affordable Care Act, states have to have, also in addition to our staff, they have to have navigators. And each state, based on their population, is allowed so many navigators. Say Wisconsin will have 2 navigators for the entire state. And they will help to answer some of the questions that people have once they get to know this is, am I eligible? What do I need to do? Where do I go? What do I do? Some of this is going to be done online for the marketplace. A lot of it is going to be done online. But there will still be a number of people who will have lots of questions and will want to come in person or talk to our staff. And so we're planning at this point in time on what we need to do.
Supervisor Beck?
Who's getting these postcards or whatever? Just, yes. Is it going to people within the poverty or whatever the cutoff is on the poverty level or wherever that cutoff is, 130%, 200%, or wherever it is? Or is it going to anyone that is on Badger Care now? Or is it going to anyone that... anyone that works for a company that's below 50 employees, who's getting these postcards?
Or above 50 employees.
Well, their employers required to provide insurance for those people.
And the answer to your question is all of
them. So you're talking 5.5 million people are getting postcards? Everyone in the state of Wisconsin? Every household?
I'm not saying they're all getting postcards, but there are all kinds of PSAs out there. You can hear it on the radio now. There's things on TV that are telling people about the Affordable Care Act, and the people who will get the written notices are probably the folks that are currently receiving Badger Care Plus, some people who are on the wait list for other programs. The childless adult program, it's called the Core Badger Care Program. There's a long wait list of about, but there's a lot of people who have been waiting to get on Medicare who have no children. And so they got that list, whatever, you know, whatever addresses they have for those people on the wait list, they'll be sending information to them. All Medicare folks will be giving the information. Just about everybody who's receiving public assistance benefits in the state of Wisconsin will be receiving those, as well as the PSAs.
Because 26,000 seems low.
Perhaps it's
28,000.
Yeah, but that's on top of, you know, the 42,000 that already exist.
Okay, so you're talking
additional,
about
additional. Yes. That number reflects the Ocean Hand receipt.
Yeah,
that's just. And the state has done these projections. I don't know where they get their numbers from. They obviously have some system things that they're looking at to tell us how many people walk into
what is the information you're going to give them, or do you not know that yet?
Well, we are going to, once they change the system, we're going to do an eligibility determination for them based on their household size, based on their income. And I didn't mention that that's changing also in that. I didn't mention the Magi, did I, at this meeting?
We were hoping.
But the Magi is the method that the federal government is putting in place to determine medical assistance eligibility for both Medicare Plus and the marketplace. And it's based on tax returns. It's called a modified adjusted gross income. And it's quite complicated, and I don't pretend to know everything about the Magi, but based on your filing status, it's very possible. We have many blended households, as you can imagine, people who aren't married, who have kids together. And depending on how they file their taxes, right now they're all considered, you know, one household and income is considered together. But under these new rules, the children will be attached to whoever they're attached to on the income tax returns, and that's why the systems need to talk to each other so that we know how they're filing their income taxes and we know what households to count for the eligibility determination. So lots of things have changed and have changed.
I wanted to ask something. You spoke to the wait lists.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it can be, I recently learned that somebody can be used for years. Yes. And so somebody was just recently talking to me, an adult teenager who was trying without parents. And so will that wait list go away once? I mean, are they going to be able to accommodate everybody? How long is it going to take for all these people to actually have active coverage?
Well, the projections are that the first 10,000 people will come to our doors between October and December.
Yes,
the projection. And the projections are that those adults on the wait list will come in quicker than anybody else because they've been waiting so long for medical assistance coverage. So
they'll come in your door, but will they get, and they'll apply, but mm-hmm. will they get active coverage, I mean, right when they get there? I mean, is there going to be a...
There's a process with everything.
Sure.
So we have to collect information and put it into the computer, and it tells us whether they're eligible or not. And as I stated earlier, those who are at 100% or below mm-hmm. of the federal poverty level, they'll be eligible now for MagicCare Plus. Mm-hmm. Others will be routed to the marketplace, and they will determine.
I guess my question is, how long will the process take? Do we have an estimate of how long
we'll
start getting these people access?
The process takes 30 days or less, and that's why we have those performance standards that I spoke about some time ago, that we have to get our cases processed within 30 days or we face penalties.
Even with this great influx, it will still be 30 days.
And we have asked the consortium to ask the state if they would waive the 30-day requirement because
mm-hmm.
it's going to be such a tremendous influx of people, and they have not responded yet. They have taken notes and said, we will definitely consider it.
You think after this number, we just go into?
I didn't know if you had set a number for how much a family under the poverty level will have to pay, or if you said it was free completely for medical care.
I did not say, but let me find those notes. There are premiums associated with most of the coverage, unless you're at 100% or less of the federal poverty level. But the premium will range from those over 100% up to 400% of the poverty level. The premium will range from 2% to 9.5%. And 9.5% is the cutoff because the law under affordable care says that the premium has to be affordable, and so it cannot be more than 9.5% of the household income.
Now, I know last year we struggled to get you an extra person at the call center because we had a 20-minute wait if someone called. Now, obviously, I would assume the 20 minutes to answer the phone is still being applied, and you have one extra person. So are you budgeting with that money that's to come in for more people at the call centers? And okay, so you're on top of how many we might need ahead of time for that?
We are looking at how many people we think we need between Kenosha and the team.
And the ones you have are trained and running? And will be. Okay.
Well,
because I know the backlog was hard on you guys last time, and I know Racine wasn't that much better. I know parts of northern Milwaukee area and some were much better than you were. We looked bad on that list. So I'm just wondering, are we going to look horrible again, or are we ramping up?
We hope not, because since I was here last time, the standard did go down from 20 minutes to 15 minutes, and we're at less than 5 minutes now.
Bravo! Was the one full-time employee there?
Well, there were actually three.
All right. Okay. I'm just curious. Because I know we want to assist you, but we also want to know what's coming because, you know, it reminds me of when they had the transportation issue and you guys took the bull by the horn to make sure that it was going to go well. And then when it hit the state, we were doing well. So it just sounds like you're working hard and hoping we're going to assist you so Kenosha does that well, you know? Because otherwise the headaches just come back at us again anyway, you know? And it may be the Affordable Care Act, but truly it's so full of holes. The ideas are there, but then the holes have to be putty. So all your minds together is a very good thing at this point because of that. And I do believe using any shared resources is the way to go. You know, everyone doesn't have to reinvent the wheel. If you get the right website site and it works, train Kenosha, train Racine, get moving. You know, the quicker it works, the better, because it's just going to be a nightmare, and the yelling's going to be a nightmare. You know, and it's not just the patients, it's the providers, it's the system, it's going to be the government, it's going to be everything. You know? Yeah, you're right. So it just sounds like that's what we're heading.
Like
a tornado.
Any other questions? I'm noting here from the State Department of Health Services, the Division of Public Health, the Office of Health Informatics, in the 2008-2010 Wisconsin Family Health Survey, which is the most recent one on record for Kenosha County, they have our currently uninsured listed at 12,000, our employer sponsored at 105,000, folks with private insurance at 11,000. Folks on Medicaid at 24,000, folks on Medicare at 7,000, and others they have listed as 1,000. The sample size for Kenosha County was 297 people, done by phone.
That's nice.
Part of
the
reason
that we have actually.
If you'd like, I can email that to you, but you're going to have to ask me for it. Because it is available for you to find on your own. Anything else for this screen? Okay. Thank you. Keep us posted.
Yes.
Okay. Agenda item number
eight.
Such other business is authorized by law. Do you not think there is any Oh, yes.
As you can see, Dr. Woodward did not make an appearance, and the light is flickering as I say that. I don't know what that means.
No, Adam just said banter.
And as I pointed out earlier, this was our second attempt for him to get appointed on the board, and I'm still hoping that this committee would consider that this evening.
What is the pleasure of the committee? Supervisor Johnson?
Yeah, I believe the director pointed out that the meetings that he'll be attending are 7:30 a.m., correct?
Right.
And will fit much better into the schedule. Also, again, I think that we'd be lucky to have him on the committee, so on the board. So I will support his appointment. And it does appear that he was going to attempt to be here.
Correct.
The motion actually is to, we use the table till the end.
He was tabled till he could be here.
Can he go to the meetings without being appointed?
He can go, but he has no voting rights.
But you make him come to this meeting.
Out of curiosity, what would be items that the workforce development board would talk
about? Come to the next meeting.
Actually, it's all my
calendar. We do have to submit a plan to the state annually that needs to have the committee weigh in on and approve. That's the big voting part. Most of it is informational items that are shared on the economy and certainly having the higher level academic institutions there helps as we plan our training job market for job seekers. So, yeah, and then the financials are also voted on. They have to be approved by the
It's monthly?
Quarterly. So, our next meeting is in June before this meeting.
That's why you're so interested.
So, is there a way for us to?
The options, as I understand them, is if this committee so chooses, you can approve him without him being here. It's just sort of a practice that we have because we want to see the person, you know.
Even though we've already had the motion to?
The motion was to move to the end of the meeting, which we're now here, so it's up for consideration. It wasn't to table indefinitely.
I thought it was until he showed up.
Until he showed up.
Is there such a thing? Or, I mean,
you can make whatever motion. Okay, so, well, do we have written what now?
It was the motion to table until he showed up.
Okay.
That's what the motion was.
All right.
But you could just make another motion.
Well, is it brand new? Because, I mean, we have to, yours is on the floor, so we've got to take it.
Well, we've already voted on my motion. That's done.
That's what I mean. We
that's
voted
done.
On his in the past. So.
Okay.
The only question I have, how big is that committee, sir? Is his vote, I mean, if it's seven people.
No, it's a large committee.
It's a large committee?
Yes.
Then I stick with the motion you had because it's not going to.
When's the next meeting, then?
June 22nd, I believe.
Well, the last time that we offered for those people to come in just before the board meeting.
June 20th.
I would not have a problem with that.
And your board meeting is June 20th.
What?
June 20th is the next Workforce Development Board meeting, and the Human Service Committee meeting will be June 25th.
Yeah.
Just a point of information. I believe a motion to remove from the table could be in order.
To remove his motion?
Yeah.
Motion
to remove from the table could be in order.
Motion to remove from the table.
Motion by Supervisor Johnson. Is there a second?
If the committee would consider, if we could get Dr. Woodward to commit to a date before this next regularly scheduled meeting, you know, maybe sometime before the next one of your next county board meetings, just a half hour or something, would that be okay?
That's what I said before.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, we'll see if we can have
sweeten the deal and tell them I'll have some music questions waiting for.
And we're willing to come to that to meet him, so that shows what, you know, I mean.
To the 7:30?
To whatever. We're willing to show up early for him.
All right, we'll see what we can do. Just a public service announcement that tomorrow at noon at the lower level of the courthouse is the juvenile justice report. presentation, and we've been doing that for how many years now, Ron?
This will be our 8th report.
Yeah, and we're, I think, the only county in Wisconsin, and one of the few in the nation, that actually reports back on how our delinquency unit does in handling kids. So I encourage you to attend lower level, 12 o'clock, in the courthouse.
In the jury room.
And then also at 1:30 is the drug court open house. At 2 o'clock, they'll have a panel of, I believe, 3 graduates speak that will probably, if you have the time, please stop by and see what they have to say about the benefits of that program.
Same room?
That'll be in first floor courthouse, Judge Melisasa's courtroom. So we go through those many doors, through security, it's the courtroom right to your left.
For those of you, Mr. Juvenile Justice Report, can we do at least a snapshot of that for our next committee?
Sure.
Is that okay for members? Because I don't know if everyone has that on the calendar.
We'll send it out to you electronically, and then we'll have a presentation.
Yeah, I don't know if we have. And I don't know if we have drug court data stuff. I know that came up at a previous meeting. If it's too early to bring some of those things back.
We'll start, see what we have available. I know
we have that.
Yes, we've been tracking things, but the number of graduates isn't a large number.
Any comments from the committee?
For him or the?
Well, did you? That was it. After you said one thing.
We want to hear your comments about Jack.
Who's going to start?
I know the table.
Committee member comments.
That's what I meant, that you were talking about talking to him, and I bring that.
We're fortunate to have with us 2 new youth and governance members. Please introduce yourselves, tell us your life's ambitions, if you picked this committee first, if you didn't, tell us what you're interested in, you know. Don't be bashful.
Okay, my name's Lindsay Allen. I'm a junior. I go to Tremper.
Yay.
I'm excited to be here on this committee and get to know you all.
The man was tabled.
Were we your first choice?
Answer that.
You picked planning and development, didn't you?
No. Okay. You guys were my second, I want to say.
Career ambition?
I'm not sure yet what I want to do. I definitely want to go to college after high school and just see what happens with that.
Okay. I mean, the thing that just inspires you, that you just get excited by. It's okay. We can share it. We all have it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm really into sports, I guess. I mean, I can say
soccer.
Politics and anything.
Yeah,
soccer. I don't really play soccer anymore.
That's good. I mean, certainly, you know, we've talked about being more physically active and being healthy, so any conversations you want to have with our Department of Health, I'm sure they'd love to be interested or, you know, whatever. Doors are open to you. So welcome.
I'm Alicia Skolitsky. I'm a junior at Indian Trail, and I take e-school as well, so I'm very attend school all day long, so I have time to do things. I work 3 jobs. Not done with this, so I'm a little busy, but anyways, I applied for this because my dad's on the county board, and that I actually enjoyed listening to what he was talking about, and I would watch the meetings online sometimes. Anyways, and I'm looking forward actually to working in this department. My first choice was finance, I think, but that's kind of boring, so.
Career-wise?
I want to own my own business one day, so I plan on working towards a golf scholarship for college next year and attending college and getting my political science and a few other business degrees.
Very interesting. Any economics that you back to that problem with yourself?
Yeah,
possibly. The thing that inspires you, just excites you?
Dogs. I like dogs.
Any particular breed?
No.
Okay.
No.
Can you introduce
yourself?
Introduce
yourself?
Yes.
All right, I got you. We should have, like, coordinated by email.
Okay.
Cool. We can start here. Supervisor now.
Yeah, I was one of the few people in all of the interviews, and she was one of very few of the people we interviewed for youth and government that knew who her county board supervisor was.
It would have been a problem.
He sets a curfew.
So if committee members, we can go around the table this way and just want to introduce yourselves, how long you've been elected, what you do, what you're interested in.
I'm Dr. Muntimer. I'm a family physician, and I've been on the county board since 2012, and I've been a Kenoshite prep. I love human services, and basically I love anything that makes people healthy, but I like politics too because I'm really learning about the different ins and outs of personalities and how it fits and where we're going. So I like being here. It's fun.
I'm Dave Little, district office supervisor. I'm one person on this committee. Also serve on Public Works. What's your father?
I'm Rita Johnson. I am on this one. I'm on Judiciary and Law Enforcement. I'm on the Joint Services Board, which is the City of Kenosha and the County of Kenosha, and Fire and Police. I also sit on a board for Lake George Rehabilitation. I'm a businesswoman. I manage global trials while I'm a consultant. I for large pharma, I manage global clinical trials for them, just to be more effective and spend less money. And since we're all elected at the same time, so we all.
Good evening. I'm David Holman. I have the privilege of chairing this committee. It's a bit of a blast, actually. I think it'll be fun. It's been fun. I've been elected since 2008. I'm actually 28, so I had less of this when I started. As far as my interests, I do music at my church as well as do some things sort of professionally on the side. Big into social and economic justice, very much into systems analysis in terms of how things function. So you hear me ask a lot of really strange questions, analyzing things from multiple angles. That's probably why I love data and I love charts and graphs, which I think
someone has to.
So I don't think I've ever had a graph that I have in life. No, that's not true. Ones that don't have enough information. So welcome. If you have any questions, we're all open. Ask anything. Ask often. If you have ideas, I encourage you to bring them. We don't have enough young people bringing things forward in this community. Do it. You got the brains, you got the power, exercise it. That's why you're here.
And there's two board members that aren't here, Supervisor Arrington and Supervisor Frederick. They'll also be at meetings, so you get to see two new faces, but they're also county board supervisors. And if you guys have met me before, Aaron Decker, county board supervisor, is 22.
And remind me when Supervisor Frederick and Arrington are here so that we can. If staff who's present wants
Sharon
to
Sharon Davis, I take the minutes of the meetings, send out your agendas and emails, communicate with you.
John Jansen, Department Head for Kenosha County Human Services.
And you talked how long you've been doing it? Go ahead, yeah.
Me? Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, that's an amazing different job.
It's a case of this, whatever you have here.
I've been here 20 years.
I've been with Kenosha County since 1989, did a lot of different jobs before I became department head in 2008.
I'm Ron Rogers. I'm the director of the Division of Children and Family Services. There's six divisions under the Department of Human Services, so John's my boss, and I'm one of the division directors. And I've been here since Thanksgiving of 2000, basically, in different, a couple different roles.
Evelyn Green, Division Director for Workforce Development, and I started in January 1990, as an economic support supervisor. I worked in personnel for a while, and I started this position in September of 2000.
I'm Lori Staves. I'm the CFO for Human Services for the whole department, and John is now my boss. Dave Gerson does, and he's the finance director for the company. So, I've been here 13 years. I just want to say one thing because I forgot to say it. I think it's outstanding that we got that grant. It's amazing. You know, it says a lot to our department. I know that the amount was much more than most places got. So, I mean, that just speaks to what a great job you guys did.
No,
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn by Supervisor Bender, second.
Second by Supervisor Union. All those in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, the committee stands adjourned.
Thank you.